Jim Taylor back on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Always nice to visit with people in the media profession. We get a chance to visit with Jonathan Ketz at WQAD-TV. I know Jonathan and Angie Sharp, they provide us some news updates daily here at WRMJ. All right, so tell us, how's everything going in the TV news business at this time?
It's tough, and I don't know like how it compares to your and Jim's job, for instance, or your and John's job, Jim. But so right now, I, for instance, you know, I'm talking to you at 8:05 in the morning. I'm the only one in the newsroom, and that's because we are down two producers, and which means that I'm the only one in here until 11 o'clock when I go back on the air. Unfortunately, we just had one of our producers have to leave because he's from Canada, and he wasn't here on a he was here on a student visa, and he just graduated from Ambrose, and he hasn't gotten citizenship into the U.S. yet because the system is so backlogged. So he has to leave, and that's part of the reason why we're down a producer on our morning shift, which means our executive producer has to produce part of the show, and we're just down people right now, not to mention the coronavirus, which means that Angie is not here in the studio, so it just makes things a little bit tougher altogether.
Yeah, I was thinking about when I do some of these interviews or do these stories, you know, I always think about, well, what's the headline going to be? And I thought when I you know, when I was putting this together and we set up this interview this week, I thought the headline would be WRMJ interview, doing the news in today's environment, as told by Jonathan Ketz at WQAD.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
So, but I mean, let's talk about the environment we're in. You know, especially like the thing that I look at where the reaction from people right now that you get is, one, with since, you know, middle of March, COVID-19, that people have these opinions, volatile opinions. They seem mad about it. They want to argue. So COVID-19 is one of these things that if you do a story on that, the reaction is, you know, well, you know what the reaction is. And the other issue as of late here within the last month is this Black Lives Matter movement. If we do a story on that, there's a tremendous amount of reaction and feedback and argument. I'm talking about, you know, the Facebook posts. So what about that headline, doing the news in today's environment as told by Jonathan Ketz at WQAD-TV?
I mean, I guess I think that, I mean, social media, we all have to do it. I'm sure, I mean, I know you do it. You do it on your do you do it on your personal page, or do you have like a radio station?
We have a regular radio station page.
I think social media is really tough because I think that there are times when people will put things on there, you know, news personalities or journalists, or meteorologists. Like, I think there are times that we put things on there, and I'm guilty of it, you know, sometimes too. We'll put things on there just to get a reaction out of people. But sometimes it's probably just to do that and to irk people. It may be our true thoughts. It may, and hopefully it's truly what people think, but there is the added element to it that this post is just going to piss people off, and I'm going to do it because it's going to get good reaction. And that's the problem that I have with social media. I like online, like web stories better, and online journalism on news websites, because it's less opinion and more facts. And when you, and you know, like I just said, I have to post on Facebook. It's part of my job. I realize that a lot of people get their news on Facebook. but I also think that there is much more likely of a chance for something to be untruthful on Facebook as well.
And when you use the terminology good reaction, you're talking about a lot of comments.
Correct. Yep.
And unfortunately, you know, for my position, a lot of the comments now are lowest common denominator type of stuff. Like when you see stories where you see, you know, and you can use your site as an example, WQAD-TV, where there's a story done and there's 230 comments, 300 comments. Well, I ain't gonna read through that because I know what that is resorting to, and I'm like, well, what good is this really doing when you see like that many comments, because you know it's just a back and forth, and then you know people got to get their stand-up comedy routines ready and their GIFs and their memes and things of that nature. I mean, that's what we're resorting to now, right? In a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, and it's concerning. But I mean, if that's the way the business is and you want to stay in the business, I'm not saying that you need to get involved in that, but you need to understand that it's there. Like it's and that's the way it's going to be probably until I'm told otherwise. We're not going to get off Facebook anytime soon.
Yeah. So, you know, the other big thing in the media today that people like to throw out the terminology mainstream media.
Yeah.
Mainstream media, cats. You bum. Mainstream media. So if it doesn't fit somebody's position or belief or stance or opinion, it resorts to typical
MSM.
Mainstream media. So tell us a little bit about dealing with that. I'll truthfully say I'm not feeling that really out here yet from a local radio standpoint. But I tell you, man, I'm starting to notice it more and more with the Quad City media outlets in terms of, well, the Quad City Times or Argus Dispatch, and then even 4, 6, and 8. We're kind of seeing now that trickle down of fake news, the criticism of typical cats saying this, doing this.
Right.
At 8. Are you feeling that? Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I don't really feel it personally. I would say that as a station, we probably get some of that. But that would be, you know, just WQAD in general. Is it necessarily on our, you know, criticism of our morning show? Probably not criticism. I think it's just criticism of the station in general. That sort of thing, like, I don't take personally, but I think that there are people who don't have faith in the media right now, and I think that's concerning. You know, I'm sure that you agree with me on that. And when you have a president who does the exact same thing that you're talking about the mainstream media all the time or the lamestream media, it's concerning. And I'm not talking about Republicans. I'm just talking about President Trump. I think that's concerning for our future. And it's also concerning when people are doubting what we are telling people in general. I think it's mostly on a national story basis, only if we're reporting on national stories. I don't think people necessarily think that about the local stories we cover, but if we're covering national news and politics, I think that's just going to bring out that sort of topic among some of our viewers.
Yeah, and I know I'm not representing WRMJ in my opinion speaking here, and I know just to preface your remarks, I know, you know, we're talking, this is Jim Taylor talking to Jonathan Katz. So my criticism, people always say that they generalize, right? It's the media's fault. They see something, typical media or mainstream media. And I admit that, you know, I hear that some of the times, or I see that, and I take offense to that, because I'm like, well, they talking about me.
Right.
But then when the shoe's on the other foot and other professions get generalized, man, they get mad. You know,
yeah.
They're like, you, it's a typical right now. We talk about police reforms and a lot of these issues and a lot of these stories. What, you hating cops? You talking about all cops? You talking about me? No, and that's what I'm saying about the generalization. It's okay to generalize media today. You know,
yeah.
You all the same. But,
right. Yeah, that's what people do.
Yeah, but then, you know, when the shoe's on the other foot, oh, don't you dare say that. You know what I'm saying? So that's one of the issues I have. And I think the other thing, you know, my criticism is social media.
Yeah.
To me, is the root of the problem. And by that, I mean, and I talk about this ad nauseum with a lot of people, you know, with social media today, on all these issues we talk about, do you ever see somebody post something or share something that is counter to what they believe in or what their position is? No, you never do. And the internet allows you always to do one thing. You, no matter what your opinion is, you can go on the internet somewhere and find that opinion, that position, that belief, that stance is affirmed or confirmed somewhere, and you can share it and say, voila, I'm right. No matter where you're getting that information from. And that's what I think. That's the great divide we're at, I think, in this country, locally, regionally, is social media. It just allows us to dig in and kind of try to solidify our position instead of taking an analytical look at something. Long story short, long-winded. That's what I say.
Well, I guess the question is, I mean, how do we deal with this? And that's probably the question that you're asking me, but I don't know. I think it helps, like, if you, as somebody who's on the air, like you or me, I think it helps if we have a thick skin. If somebody's going to criticize us personally, I think you need to look at that comment before you react and say, does this person have a point, or are they just crazy? And if they have a point, I think you need to be respectful in the way that you respond to them. If they don't, you should probably just ignore it. Like, I mean, I have blocked, since the coronavirus began, there have been a couple of people that I've blocked from my Facebook page for disputing off saying that the coronavirus numbers that we were wrong, saying that the coronavirus numbers that we were reporting were wrong. Okay, well, that's fine, whatever. Like, we weren't getting anywhere with our conversation. I didn't feel like they were being respectful about it, so I blocked them on my page. You know, now I don't have to deal with it. Now I don't have to worry about it. Whatever. I mean, everybody has a right to their opinion. But you know, I'm in control of my Facebook page, so if I don't think that you're being respectful or truthful, one or the other, or both, in the way that you're talking to me, I mean, I have the right to block you because it's my page, so, you know, I don't have to worry about it. And I guarantee you, my coworkers would probably say the same thing.
So I bet you when you block that person, I bet you they're like, Ketz is a snowflake.
they're probably like, I pissed Ketz off, whatever. But no, in all honesty, they probably don't.
Okay, but
like,
so
they probably think they won, and that's fine. I don't care. You can have your win if it means that much to you. Like, and honestly, like, I haven't blocked that many people on my page. I haven't gotten too political or personal in posts in a while. I do that by design.
All right. So I know one of the words they use, you know, covering this COVID-19 story, you know, you always hear uncharted territory or something.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, but to back up that story, though, You know, it's interesting covering that story because, you know, the way it evolved, and I'm not talking about just from a media standpoint, but from how healthcare responded to it, how local government, regional government, national government, how they all responded, it was kind of a moving target. You know, not just from a media standpoint, but I'm talking about the response from, you know, healthcare and government at the local, regional, national, or local, state, and national level. So I mean, that it's been a challenging story to cover, really.
I completely agree with you, and so I'll give you an example. Like, so I do our ticker, which is the scroll at the bottom of our page, or at the bottom of your TV screen every morning if you watch GMQC. So if you watch it, at times during the morning show, there will be stories that scroll local, state, and national. The national ones populate automatically. I have no control over that. The state and local ones, I put in there every single day. And when I'm off, Angie does. So the state of Illinois and the state of Iowa populate their coronavirus numbers differently. Iowa's is a rolling, and I don't know if you know this, I don't know, you know, like when we do radio hits for you, like I know I oftentimes put the positive cases of the coronavirus in my news updates for you, but Iowa's coronavirus numbers populate consistently day by day, whereas Illinois's only populate day by day, and not constantly during the day. So that's a difference in how they record their numbers, which is a difference in how we record our numbers when we read them every single day. And for Iowa, and I'm not the one recording the numbers on our side, but in Iowa, we as a station have to pick a certain point in the day where we take, okay, what are the positive cases at this point in time on this certain day to record them as, because they change every so often, and every so often during the day. That doesn't happen in Illinois.
And that's, I mean, that's it, being from, you know, the two state area, and also dealing with a story about how, you know, opening up the government or opening up the economy. And then even from a high school sports standpoint, you know, how Iowa does it, how Illinois does it. That is another issue, you know, reporting-wise, that has to be a challenge in the Quad Cities area. You know, and speaking of your work and doing the early mornings, and I tell people about kind of connection and working together, the people you work with in the morning, it really seems like you guys get together, that you're a good fit for one another. Is it that way? I mean, in terms of, or is it just good acting by you guys? Because it really seems like you get along pretty good.
I would never want somebody to think that I'm acting, and if they did, that would bother me, because I went to school for journalism and TV broadcasting. I took one theater class my freshman year of college, and I never took another one. I wouldn't, if we were acting, that would bother me. I've been told that before, that we do a good job of interacting together on the show. It's more of a talkative show than Nightside, but to counterpoint that, we have so much more time to talk amongst the three of us on the air than Jim, Denise, and James do, because we have a 2.5-hour show. Like, we have a show that would probably be a little bit more relatable to your show, Jim, than the 5, the 6, and the 6:30, which are each only a half an hour apiece. So we have that opportunity.
Well, it's, you know, your storyline is interesting too, because your dad is in the business, and your late grandfather, Jim King, who's a legend in the Quad Cities, and then Chris Ketz worked in the Quad Cities in Kansas City, your father. So, you know, a third generation. And then it's crazy because you're working at Channel 8 where they worked.
Yeah.
What? So I know, like, Matt Randazzo probably calls you the Chip Carey of WQAD TV, probably, with that. So what about, I mean, is that something that you said, well, grandpa worked there, dad worked there, maybe I'd like to make a stop at QAD in Moline. I know you grew up in Kansas City, but is that, that something you wanted to do?
Yeah, so when I graduated from college in 11, you know, obviously I was looking for a job just like anybody else. I knew I wanted to get into TV journalism, and, you know, this is a small market for television. It's not really small. It's not big either. It's a good starter out market. And so let's see. So in December of 11, I graduate. I'm looking for a job. I talked to Alan, who, you know, my boss then, my boss now. And, you know, I've been here ever since. I met my wife here. My grandmother's still here. Like you said, I would, you know, I'm from Kansas City, but this was a home away from home because, I would come up here as a kid. So, like I always say, you know, we would come up here in the summers, maybe around the 4th of July or the week after for the JDC as a kid. So I always kind of thought that this was a home away from home, and it made perfect sense for me to look for a first job here. And 8 years later, I'm still here.
Well, I mean, is it something that at a young age you knew that it was in your radar, it was in your blood that I'm going to follow dad, I'm going to follow grandpa? I mean, did you know at a young age that's what you wanted to do?
I would say in high school I did. Like in eighth grade I took one television class. I think like in high school, especially like my senior year, maybe even my junior year of high school, I started taking a newspaper class, and I found out that I loved journalism. I love journalism to the point where I love, I have a big respect for newspaper reporters, because I oftentimes think that they get the story before television reporters do. It's even tougher in that business than it is in television. I just feel like from finances stake, but I think that, like you and I talked about before, when I reversed this on you, when I was the one interviewing you, like newspaper and radio reporters are the ones that to a certain extent maybe still have beats, and oftentimes they are the ones that get stories first. And if you're getting a story first, props to you, and it's accurate. Like I have a great amount of respect for you. Like I think that we still, even in this virtual world that we are, especially in with COVID-19 and on social media, where we're talking to people not face to face, communicating with people face to face safely is the best way that you're going to get a story. And I think you do that by going to meetings and meeting people.
Yeah, and I would agree with that 100%. And I don't know what journalism school is doing now, because I'm removed from 1990, going to the Harvard of the Midwest, SIU Edwardsville, back off everyone. And that's the thing about the technology and learning all that, in the writing is important, but covering the story and covering the beat is something that is a lesson to be learned. And maybe the only way you learn that lesson is getting on the job in doing it. You know, for small market radio, it's a little bit easier. I always have and I think this is an old bald guy speaking now, it's so much easier to cover a story, because you're basically, your phone now serves as a production studio in radio, where you all, but I, even before that, I always would have my recorder with me wherever I could go, and I'd say, well, there's a story I can pick up, or there, I can get some audio from that, or get some audio from this, or that something, and people say, look at Taylor, he's got his microphone with him again, and, you know, people tuck and run, they're like, he's coming to talk to me. But I'm saying that covering the beat is what you say, I think, is very important. And I know in these challenging times financially for the industry, the media industry, it's hard to cover a beat, right?
Yeah,
because there's just not enough people to do it.
Right. Well, and yeah, and then you add COVID onto it, and we're doing everything via Zoom. And I guess that makes things easier in a way, but you know, hell, if you don't know how to, work Zoom, then there's obviously a problem there. But, you know, technology, can make our job easier, I feel like, but it also can make it harder. I guess it just depends on the situation, that you're in at the time.
Well, and I have a lot of respect for the Quad City Media. And how important is it to have competition, you know, where I think it's very important that there's three, you know, television stations covering news. There's two, well, I know that the two newspapers are owned by the same
company
now, you know, and I think that's disappointing. And I think, you know, the conglomerate ownership of radio, I don't like that. I mean, I just like more independence in terms, and I'm talking about from a journalistic standpoint. And I told you the story when I first started in Alita. You know, I'd go to a meeting, there'd be four reporters, basically, covering in a town of 3,600. And I just think having newsrooms, whether it's print, radio, or TV, having them fully staffed and having as many eyes as possible covering these things, it is pretty important. And I'm sad that we're losing a lot of that. I'm really sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I like when, if I see, you know, hey, there was just a layoff at the Dispatch in Rock Island Argus, like I remember there were, that's not too long ago. Or no, I'm talking about when the Dispatch became owned by the Quad City Times. I'm like, God, that sucks. Like, it is so nice to have competition because let's think of the free market world. It drives, the more competition you have, the better the effort you're going to get, you would assume, right? So if you have competition in the room, you are going to try to be better at your job, and the less competition you have, the more you could slack off, the more you could do less, what have you. But I guess also from the capitalistic standpoint, it's like, how do we as journalists, how do our companies make more money? I wish I had the answer to that so we could all stay in business, but I don't. Like, that's the golden question, is it not?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the equation, making it work. And, you know, just for me, having as many reporters as possible, it's about the journalistic aspect of covering the story and really keeping people honest that, hey, there's somebody, you know, watching you, or they're covering this. And
right.
I think that is very important, and we're losing a lot of that. So, you know, as we wind down our conversation, you know, so 2011 you started. Where do you think we're headed in this business, media-wise?
That's a good question.
What would you advise people still to get in this business?
I would. It's mentally challenging at times. It's physically, I even feel like it's physically challenging at times, because there are probably some people who think they can't take a day off because it would short staff their coworkers if they didn't. But, I would recommend somebody to get into this business, but I think you really need to have a drive for it, because if you don't have like a drive and a love for journalism, then it's like, I've heard people say this business will eat you alive. And I would agree with that statement. There are so many people that like do it for a year, or they break their contract early because they don't like it, and they get out and, you know, they move on to something better, whether it's PR or whether it's something completely different, and good for you. Like, at the end of the day, you need to be happy, you know, even more so than doing a good job at your profession. But if you don't like have a true love for this, or aren't interested in journalism or television, then it's going, you may not be happy in this job.
So and the reputation of the industry, though, in terms of where we're at, it may, you know, more, you've talked about it, you know, nationally, there's more maybe criticism there from a national standpoint, but you know, I tell people too, do you understand between opinion and reporting? You know, when there's when there's four boxes on the screen at CNN and it's four people talking about an issue, that's opinion.
Yeah.
That's not recorded. Yeah. So you can take issue with opinion, and if you want to call that fake news, well, it's not. It's fake opinion. You're disagreeing with their opinion. They're not reporting on the scene of something. They're offering opinion. And people don't like what they're saying. I get that. Okay, that's opinion.
That's fine. But
reputation standpoint of this industry, and like I said, I still believe it's starting to trickle down a little bit more, and I hear some of the criticism of, you know, Quad City TV people, fake news, or, you know, lib media, lamestream media stuff, not as much as you do nationally. So reputation-wise, are you concerned about that trickling down to a local level?
I am a little bit, but I would just, like I said earlier, I don't see it a whole lot in local stories that we do. I just see it in our reports of national news. And if it's a report of national news, it's likely something that we took from ABC or CNN. Not to say that what we are reporting is untrue, but it's probably not something that we did ourselves. You see, you know, you understand that.
Yeah. Okay, so just from you personally, so growing up with a father in the TV business and a grandfather in the TV business. So in terms of like the product that you put out personally, so like when you first started and they said, Ketz, go out, you're going to cover this store, and you got the microphone and the camera and you're doing a stand up or reporting on something. So you're nervous probably on your own just doing the story. But then, man, my dad, he's in the business. My grandpa's in the business. So what was that like? Like, do you remember the first piece you ever did? And did you think, oh, man, I knocked it out of the park. Look at Ketz, Pulitzer Prize. Back off, everyone. Or was it, man, I suck at this thing, and my dad gonna let me have it?
So I remember the first live shot I did here. So, like, the great thing about, like, my college experience, I feel like, was that I went to the University of Missouri, where our college television station is at, and, I mean, you know this from Lisa Hoscheid. You know, Lisa and I went to school together. She was a year older than me. We both went to, you know, one of the only schools in the country where the college television station is actually the NBC affiliate for that market. So in Columbia, Missouri, which is mid-Missouri, KOMU, the television station that is actually the NBC affiliate in mid-Missouri, is reported on and produced by college students. So I never got into the producing aspect. I was only reporting and anchoring because I felt like that's what I wanted to do more so than produce. But, like, I did my first live shot at KOMU in Columbia, Missouri was probably a little bit worse than my first live shot at WQAD. And I remember both, but that sort of experience that I had, my first live shot was when I was a junior in college. So I was 20 years old, but my first live shot at WQAD a year later was better because I had all that experience from doing live shots for that TV station. And it was actually going out to people in mid-Missouri, not just college students on campus. And so that experience was tremendous. I mean, it's huge. There's not a whole lot of other ways to describe it. Like, I loved my experience that I got at Mizzou.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the only way you get it is you got to turn.
You got to do it.
They got to do it, man. And you got to face criticism. And I tell everybody there's ego in this business, but there's a lot of being scared in this business too, especially when you first start. And I'm just curious then, though, do you, you know, when you got into business and you're on air for the first time, Do you talk shop with dad, or is it kind of, you know, in terms, is it hands off for him, or he's going to just let you go grow on your own, or is there any, you know, kind of self critique at home when you get home? Dad, son, you ain't going to do it this way.
Right.
What has that been like for you?
Honestly, so, like, when we talk shop, my dad and I talk about the business in general, kind of like the same things that you and I are. For the most part, he doesn't, we don't really talk about like critiques of me on the air. We normally just talk shop about like the future of the business and market and, job possibilities and openings and that sort of thing. Like we don't talk about how I'm doing on the air. Like, I'm not the one sending him clips of me that I put up on YouTube. Hey, how'd I do? Like, we at the station have a consultant that we work with every so often for that sort of thing. And so in that sense, my dad has done a good job of kind of letting me do me and not like micromanaging me because I wouldn't want that. And I don't think he doesn't want that on me. Otherwise he would do it. So that's like, we do a good job of balancing that out, like between the two of us to where, it's not overwhelming, and we can talk shop, but when we do, we're not talking about, performance on the air.
Yeah. All right.
If that makes
sense. Yeah, that's great. So as we as we wind down, I would be remiss if I didn't ask this question. Who do you hate the most at Channel 8?
What are you talking about?
I'm kidding. No, my mom always asks me, because she watches all the TV stations in the Quad Cities. I grew up in Hampton. And it's always weird because like the group of people she always hangs around with, they're always like, I wonder what that person is like on really like on TV. So what I wonder what Jonathan Katz is really like on TV. But
I tried to be my self on the air. If I don't have anything to ad lib about, like in a certain situation, it's probably because I don't have anything to talk about on the subject, and I'm not trying to be somebody that's not myself. And I don't know, like I said, I'm not an actor. Like I think that we would look dumb, or I would look dumb, if I'm trying to talk about something that I have no idea what I'm talking about. So I try to stick to my strengths, and I try not to do too much. I feel like less is more sometimes, and sometimes I don't need to talk to get my point across, and I don't need to fill dead air if I'm gonna look like an idiot doing it. So I don't like you see what I'm saying. I'm not going to get into a topic that I don't know anything about. All we, Angie, Eric, and I each have our strengths. I could BS about sports for 4 hours like you could. Like, I love you were talking about high school sports. Like, even I don't cover high school sports on a regular basis, like Dazzo, Cuff, and Celia, but like I could talk about that for a long time. And you were mentioning the differences in Illinois and Iowa. I think that sort of thing is super interesting to me. And Angie, Eric, and I know what we're good at, each of us, and what we're not good at. And we try to, I don't know, when we're having, we each talk about what we want.
Well, some great observations. We learned a little bit about Jonathan Katz at WQAD-TV. Thank you very much, sir. I really appreciate it.
You have a good day.
You're listening to WRMJ.